You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. My first guest today is Alyssa Borges, curator of public programs at the Juno Douglas City Museum. Hi, Alyssa. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Shelley. Thank you.
Yes, of course. How's summer going at the City Museum so far?
It's been really great. It's been really fun to have people visiting again. We have a lot of people from out of town, but also people within Alaska coming to the museum, and it's just really been fun to feel like we're somewhat back to our normal selves again this summer.
That's great to hear. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad it's going well, but I understand you're already looking ahead to the next season of art exhibits and that you're excited to welcome artists to submit their work. So let's start there. What do folks need to know about the application process?
Yeah, thank you. So we are calling for our next batch of solo artists for the 2022 to 2023 exhibition season. Those proposals can be from single artists or group of artists, anybody who's interested in mounting a month-long exhibit here at the City Museum during the months of November through February of those years, 2022 to 23. So they get a year to, get their work together. The deadline for that application is August 31st this year, 2021. And those applications are available online. You can download them. People can call the museum and I can get them to them by email. You can pick one up, whatever I can do to get the applications out. I'm happy to do that. So definitely check out our website. There's more information there for people to see what it's all about.
That's great. And when would the first exhibit be displayed?
November, and that would be for 2022. We're really excited to get back to that this season, but the group of solo artists who will be exhibiting this year into 2022 have been on hold for a year because of the pandemic. So we'll be exhibiting with them this fall and winter, and then this group would be for the next year's fall and winter.
Excellent. Got it. Thank you. What kind of submissions do you hope to see? Are there any themes or concepts that come to mind?
You know, we leave that open to the artist to decide. It's really, we want to showcase the local artists in Juneau and Douglas and not limit too much what the theme is and what they do. We would hope that it has some kind of connection to Tlingit Ani, but what they decide to do in terms of their medium and their content, I want to leave that up to the artist to, you know, not feel too boxed in with too many parameters. So it's really open to anything. And once we receive those applications, we have a committee that meets that's comprised of a member from the museum, but also local artists and previous recipients, you know, who've been able to, who previous solo artists. So we get together and with criteria, and then we decide on who the next solo artist will be.
Well, speaking of being boxed in or not being boxed in, I passed by the little free gallery today, and I was just wondering if you would tell us again what that is and remind our listeners how they could interact with it.
Sure. So our free little art gallery is much like a free little library in that it's a small box that's attached to the museum on the left side near the side door. In which anybody who's interested can place a little piece inside and take a piece also home with them if anything catches your eye. We've had, it seems to me, more people putting pieces in than are taking them out. And I'm not sure if people are feeling like they can't, but if anything that looks, you don't have to put a piece in to take one out, in other words. So we've been getting some really neat stuff in there and welcome anybody to add a piece that is interested in doing that.
I agree. It is pretty fun. Maybe they just don't want to detract from the little gallery once something's in there. But But thank you for that reminder about the little free art gallery. And now shifting from art to history, I saw a press release that just came out today regarding the Juno History Grant. Would you like to share a little about what that is and how people can apply?
You bet. So the History Grant is something we've done for many, many years, and we've finally reopened it, and it's going to become a yearly award in which applications for this will be due now every October. So this is really open to anybody, any single person, group of people who have an idea for preserving or sharing Juno's history or culture and who, you know, has the time and energy to follow through to complete the project. It can be a project that's partially started or one that, you know, is still percolating and hasn't been started yet, but it's really open to anything as long as it's local. And then they can apply to the grant for funding to support some of the expenses of the project. It needs to be a project that can be completed within a year. And from the time that it's awarded, they have a year to complete it. So we're calling for anybody who has been thinking about something local. They really need a little bit more help with completing. And that we've put that application online on our website. You can do it right there. For those who like to do it that way without anything, you can upload all the requirements. The instructions are there as well. Or you can also pick up we can get you a paper copy of that as well to anybody who prefers to handwrite that out.
Could you
a little bit of history on that grant I might like to add is that it was established by Marie Darlin originally to encourage high school students to learn about local history and culture. But now it is, the grant's a collaborative program between the City Museum, the Friends of the City Museum, and the Juneau Community Foundation.
I was wondering if you could share some examples of what these projects might be.
Sure. So a more recent recipient would be Ed Schoenfeld and Betsy Longenbaugh. They have been leading these very popular local murder tours, but originally this whole all their ideas were started with this grant money that helped them to complete a presentation on that they titled Murder as a Headline, both being reporters. So they used the funds to create a presentation on historic murders in Juneau and Douglas through the lens of reporting in newspapers.
That's a great example. That one's been very successful.
Yeah, and then a past example is a book published by Sandy Harbinuck in 2008. She was a recipient in 2008. And it was titled Running Toward Fire, and it's all about Juneau Volunteer Fire Department. So it can be a real range, again, of projects. It can be, you know, a presentation, maybe a performance, or even interpretive panels for different places around Juneau. It's also wide open to, you know, ideas of the projects.
I love that opportunity for creativity in applying for a history grant. So thanks for sharing that, Alyssa.
You bet.
All right. Well, back to the summer activities happening at the Juneau Douglas City Museum. What else would you like to share with our listeners today? I know you've still got walking tours happening, and then there's some changes to the summer hours and admission information.
Yeah, that's right. So I know a lot of people now people are traveling, and a lot of visitors are coming, and families are looking for things to do. And I just want people to know that we do offer free Capitol tours Tuesday through Friday of the Capitol building itself. They're really interesting. Each tour guide has a different kind of focus on what they cover, but it's they're about an hour, and they happen at 1:30 and 3 p.m. Very fun, free thing to do. And the Capitol being closed for the last year, you know, it's nice to have access in there again and to see the artwork and learn the history about the building itself. So that's one thing. And then our hours are expanding. They just keep expanding. So right now we're open Tuesdays through Friday from 10. Oh, we're open Tuesdays through Sunday, I'm sorry, from 10 to 4. But beginning the end of this month, we're going to be open 7 days a week until 6 p.m. and on the weekends till 4:30 p.m. So our hours are expanding. And I just encourage people to check our website or call for the latest hours as we get back to normal and looking more like a regular summer at the museum.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad. I'm sure that all of you there are pretty glad about that as well.
Yeah, we are. It's really fun to have people back in the building.
Absolutely. Well, Alyssa Borges, again, thanks so much for sharing all that great information about the Juneau Douglas City Museum. I always enjoy chatting with you once a month and finding out what's happening there. Was there anything that we missed? Anything else that you'd like to mention before we say goodbye today?
Just to check out the website, we keep it updated, as well as Facebook and Instagram. We have quite a bit going on there. So if you can't make it to the museum, but you just want to learn a little bit of history, that's a good place to go.
I do love your social media presence. You guys are doing a great job with that.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Alyssa. And until next time, have a great day and enjoy the rest of your month of July. We'll talk again soon.
You too, Shelley. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with 7 cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Aaron Elmore, here to tell us about the next show coming up for Theater in the Rough. Hi, Aaron.
Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for being here today. I'm excited to hear that Theater in the Rough has a new performance to talk about, opening this Friday. Are you guys ready to take on The Tempest by William Shakespeare?
Yeah, well, I can't tell you how excited we are to be able to be indoors. As much as a wonderful adventure as it was last year, I think we were one of the first theaters in the country to actually try to do a live performance. But between the bugs and the airplanes and the sun and the rain and the cold and all the elements, it's very nice and posh to be back indoors doing a play. And we're thrilled to be able to do Tempest again.
How interesting that it's something that you probably always took for granted and now feels like a luxury.
It really does. And I think it's right that it should feel like a luxury, because that place is luxurious, really. It's tiny. It's got problems. And like every theater in the world has problems. But boy, it's we're really happy to be there.
And there is McPheeters Hall, your home. You're basically your home stage, right?
Yeah, we've been there sort of partnering with sort of theater in residence with Holy Trinity Episcopal Church there. It's their parish hall, McPheeters Hall. It was built back in the 60s originally, and of course rebuilt famously in 2008 and 9 is when it reopened. We've been working in there right the way along until last summer, actually, doing one or two shows a year. And we've been doing this, I can hardly believe it, 30 years now.
That's what I saw. Happy 30th anniversary.
Yeah. Thank you.
So let's talk. Yeah, it is. It is quite a milestone, actually, for a company such as yours, and definitely something to be proud of.
Thank you. Yeah, we are.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the story, The Tempest. Would you tell me something about it for those who aren't familiar?
The Tempest is the story of a magic user who is a woman who's marooned on an island. And because she's a magic user, because she's a person in authority and a person of power, she's betrayed by her brother, and she and her baby daughter are set adrift on the ocean in a boat, and her brother takes over. They do not expect to find a little place to live, but they do find a place to live, and this story of our play picks up around the time when Prospero, the leading character, has discovered that all of her enemies are in a single ship and sailing by. So that's where the title Tempest is created, in order to maroon them on the same island where she is. And then she spends pretty much the rest of the play deciding just exactly what she's going to do.
So are you in the cast, and can you share a few lines?
Of course, yeah, I am in the cast. Also, I'm directing it. That's my main role, and I'm playing it's not a large part. King Alonso is one of the bad guys. He's King of Naples. Prospero is the Duchess of Milan, and Milano, as it's properly called by the people who actually live there. Of course, this was written by an Englishman back in the late 1500s, and so nothing is pronounced correctly. So speaking as one of the enemies of the title character, I don't have a lot of super celebrated lines, but this Tempest is the one that gives us "O Brave New World." It has such people in it. It also has the line, "We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded by sleep," which talks about the theater and also talks about our lives as microcosms of some larger thing, and that at some point there will be an end to the story that we're a part of. There will be an exit. That's part of the condition we live in. But of course, Shakespeare manages to put it in a way that's makes your jaw hit the floor. It's beautiful.
Absolutely. Well, tell me a little bit more about the production. Who else is in the cast?
A lot of our regulars. Katie Jensen is playing co-founder and co-artistic director. Katie Jensen is playing Prospero. And Prospero, of course, originally to be played by a man. And watching a play, watching this production with another white man in power really just didn't seem like the moment. Katie was eager for the challenge, and she's absolutely just right for it. Being able to have a woman play Prospero with her marooning enemies, all played by men, changes the tone of the production and makes certain parts of it more urgent and more lively, and just exactly the right way. It's a beautiful thing. Denise Gott's playing playing Ariel. Natalia Spangler's playing Miranda. So we've got a lot of our usual suspects in there. Valerie Collins has come back as she was in As You Like It Last Summer. She's come back as Stefano, the drunken butler, Dan Wayne, Strinculo. I've got everybody's name down here, but it's a cast of 12 people, and some of them have never done Shakespeare before, as almost always happens with us. We get a few people out there who can't do Shakespeare, but as we always tell them, the main reason to do this is not because of the fancy language or the affectations of the silly outfits. It's really about exploring what it is to be human and finding out what it is that draws us all together.
Indeed, his work is timeless, but I like the casting choices that you're making and everything that you were saying about that, because that allows you to reinvent some of it and try on different things and present it in a new way. And your younger audience, who wouldn't be familiar with the story, perhaps would not know who or what Prospero was supposed to be. So I like it.
I don't think anybody's going to question it once they come in, and there may be some, for those who are familiar with a version of the play that they really love, then they may be, they may suffer some interruptions to their paradigm being shifted. But that's a beautiful way to look at the play. And it was a way for us to explore parts of the play that deal with privilege and that deal with power, and that also and framing all that within this context is a way for us to feel like we could talk about things that need to be talked about, and also that are also things that members of the cast, women in the cast, are familiar with intimately and we're excited to be able to explore.
I agree that it is exciting, and it's an exciting play as well. And another element that's exciting, we touched on it a bit already, is that it will be performed indoors, just like the good old days. There are some requirements for the audience members in order to make that happen safely. So I wondered if you wanted to discuss that.
Absolutely. We wrestled with how to try to do this, taking into account some of the processes that are being engaged in by theaters across the country, all of whom have different levels of sort of local risk to COVID-19. And what we boiled down to, after having tried several processes and checking those processes through with our box office volunteers and our board members and our cast, the leadership at Holy Trinity Church, who's also dealing with gathering people in different ways, the end result was that while we're strongly recommending everybody get a vaccine, by golly, what we felt like we could require of folks is that they wear a mask when they come see the show. So that's what we're going to do. We have our usual kind of 75 or 80 seats in McPheeters Hall. If you feel nervous about coming to see a show with 80 of your close neighbors, then my recommendation is you come on a Wednesday or a Thursday, because there's almost never a full house on a Wednesday or a Thursday, and you'll have plenty of room to stretch out, kick back, and enjoy the show. Apart from that, we'll hope, of course, to get as many people in as want to see this. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece, and we're quite proud of it, and hoping that Juno's ready to come watch a play. It was always watching, coming, leaving your house and going to watch play was always an act of bravery. I felt like, because there's been plenty of times when I've been challenged to leave my house and go watch a play, and I just wasn't up for it. It's tough, but it feeds you. And if you can make it out the door, by golly, you're gonna see something fine. And if you have been to a play before and you enjoyed it, then bring somebody who hasn't been to a play before, because you may find it'll feed them too.
Great advice, Aaron. Thanks for that. And I wanted to just make sure that the audience has everything they need to know before they come out. The play does start this Friday. Will they be required to show proof of vaccine or negative COVID test or anything like that? Just mask is the only requirement?
Mask is the only requirement. We decided that asking people to show a proof of vaccine was just too much for our box office volunteers to try enforce. So we're going to ask people to wear a cloth face covering that covers their nose and their mouth. And that's the only requirement we're asking. I should probably mention as well that we're having a free preview tomorrow night, on Thursday night. We're going to open on Friday, and there'll be a show on Saturday. We're having a pay-as-you-will performance on Thursday next week. So there's some opportunities to come in if you'd like to see it at a variety of rates. And then tickets, I've been assured and told, have just gone live on the Vendini outlet. So tickets are now available all the way through to our final closing matinee on August 1st. We're going to run this 4 weeks. That should be lovely. And we're also, there's a variety of show dates and times. Most of the evenings will be 7:30. Matinees are at 2, and there's 2 of those. But all that stuff is on the Vendini website. You can find that, navigate it. You'll be in good shape. We also always, always, always sell tickets at the door. And we hope to see lots of people out there.
Now, Aaron, is this show appropriate for all ages?
You know, I think kids would really love it. There are a couple of masks. We do some top-of-the-head mask work, sort of creature kind of creatures. But the news that these creatures have to deliver is not happy news. And so they are in a threatening mode. I can imagine that some very young audience people might be a little bit scared of those particular masks. We also have a thunder sheet and some loud noises and loud music. So I think if folks are fair warned, the show itself is not only quite good, it's I think quite age appropriate for a wide variety of ages, right the way down. Maybe I don't have any children, so I'm guessing, but I would say that anybody down 8 years old is sure gonna enjoy the heck out of it. It's got all kinds of things going on. The whole thing lasts, it's also, you know, it was one of the latest plays he ever wrote. It's also not one of the longest by any stretch. I think the whole thing, runs right around 2 hours, and that very nearly includes the intermission. So I think that's just about right. So.
Well, that sounds good all around. I'm very happy for you. I know that you are thrilled to be putting on this presentation for Juno. The Tempest from Theater in the Rough opens July 9th, runs through August 1st. I've been speaking with Aaron Elmore. Lots more information. Anything that we covered today can be found at the Theater in the Rough website, and it will take place in McPheeters Hall, their home stage, 4th and Gold downtown. Aaron, anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye today?
No, it's just wonderful to be back doing this again. Thanks very much for a chance to visit with you here this afternoon.
I agree. It's been great talking to you about live theater again. So thanks, and hope you have a wonderful premiere. Break a leg.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. My final guest today is Charlie Harrington, marketing manager up at Eagle Crest. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Shelley. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here today. What's been keeping you busy up on the mountain this summer?
Well, we've been doing a whole lot on the mountain in terms of summer projects, trail improvements, and we just launched our season pass sale last week on July 1st. So it's been pretty busy up here.
Oh my gosh, you guys are always thinking about winter, aren't you? You can't stop thinking about snow up there.
Yeah, you know, it's been sunny for like 6 days in a row, and here we are to talk about winter and skiing and chairlifts at Eagle Crest. Yeah.
I also wanted to talk about Discover Eagle Crest Day, but what would you like to say about the season pass sale? Why should people be thinking about purchasing that now?
Yeah, so it's important to think about it in July if you want to purchase with payment plan. So for our most expensive passes, the adult, college, and senior passes, we do have a payment plan option. So if you want to take advantage of that, you have to make your down payment purchase sometime in July before midnight on the 31st, and then you can pay off your pass with six $50 payments bi-weekly starting August 1st. So that's important to think about right now. And then also prices just go up in general after Labor Day weekend. So start thinking about your season pass now, even in the summer. I know it's still months away from ski season, but it is important to buy early and save.
I agree. It's the best deal. So if you know you're going to be up there, you might as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially after last winter, you know, we had so many pass holders up, so many day ticket buyers, and Eagle Crest was clearly just one of the best ways to spend the winter.
No doubt. And also, you've got Discover Eagle Crest Day coming up, which sounds like a lot of fun. It looks like there's going to be hiking, biking, disc golf, live music, grilling, and chilling. So tell me about Discover Eagle Crest Day.
Yeah, so that is our annual community and season pass sales event. Historically, we've done it at the end of September, but this year we wanted to move it up, hopefully enjoy some better weather. And we're also hopefully by then going to have our mountain bike trail finished to the top of Hooter. So it'll be more of a summer atmosphere rather than like a fall atmosphere. And we wanted to sort of show off all the trail improvements. So really looking forward to that. And that'll also be the first day that guests will be able to get their passes printed at the ticket office, but still have a lot more to iron out in terms of the party element, but we do want to have a nice barbecue and live music setting right near the base of the Hooter chairlift.
Yeah, you mentioned the mountain bike trail. Can you give me an update on the status of that right now?
Well, there hasn't been much updated since where we left off last year. We had to wait for the snow to melt, and then we got into some other mountain projects, but it's nearly complete. There's just maybe another 100 yards to go at the very upper reaches of the trail. And when that's done, riders, conceivably, if Hooter Chairlift were offering lift serve mountain bike, they could get off the chairlift and then just head down this nice windy trail all the way down. And the fun thing about this trail is it's almost like a bike highway. You technically could ride any sort of bike you want down it. Probably wouldn't want a road bike, something with fatter tires, but you don't necessarily need a full suspension mountain bike to have a good time on it. Hardtails are great, and I've even seen like beach cruisers having fun on it. It's sort of almost like a paved road. The finished surface is recycled asphalt wrap, as they call it, and it's a super fun trail.
Oh, it sounds like a good time. I was up at Hilda Dam and I checked it out. It looks great.
Yeah, definitely. And the cabin too. Another project we're sort of looking at is adding more cabins around Eagle Crest. So hopefully we can make some progress on that soon.
Definitely. What else, Charlie? I know that early registration for snow sports school is also something that you can look ahead at if you think you'll be taking lessons this winter. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, at Discover Eagle Crest Day, we'll have a lot more information about that. We're not quite opening registration yet for snow sports school programs. That'll be lockers and snow sports school programs will come later in August. But the big news for now is we are working on a snowmaking improvement project. So all of the snowmaking water is at Cropley Lake, so which is mid-mountain level. That's where we hold all the water. And the pipeline out of Cropley Lake is over 40 years old and badly corroded, and you need a lot of water pressure for efficient snowmaking. So the pipe is so old, we can't pressurize it. It would just, you know, probably explode. So we're replacing the water pipeline. And that it's a huge project. We've already made a ton of progress dragging the pipe up on the snow before it melted, and then we're going to weld it all in place. We're placing, I think, almost half a mile of pipeline on the mountain, and then adding a pump station near the logjam trail. And we'll have a fully pressurized snowmaking system for most of the mountain, almost all of it. And that'll really help us produce some serious piles of man-made snow, which will get us open earlier in the season and help us fortify some main routes down the upper mountain so we can open open more terrain earlier. It's really exciting.
That's great news. I'm so happy to hear that. Well, thanks so much, Charlie, for sharing all of that. Oh, and one last thing I wanted to ask about the Juneau Ski Club bake sale fundraiser. Is there anything about that you want to share with our audience now?
Well, that's an attraction that's part of the Discovery Eagle Crest Day. They always sort of do a bake sale fundraiser, and it's important to support them too. They've got close to 100 kids in the ski school the ski club, and they're doing great things every weekend up there on the mountain. It's a great way for the kids to have some fun.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Charlie. Is anything else that I missed that you wanted to bring up today?
Yes. If you want to sponsor a chairlift tower, please send us an email. All the money is tax deductible through the Eagle Crest Foundation. It's 501c3, and we are looking for sponsors to help pay for some of the snowmaking improvements. So send an email to info@skieaglecrest.com, and I'll give you some more information.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for your time today. I hope you're having a good time up there, fun in the sun on the mountain, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon, but I'm looking forward to Discover Eagle Crest Day, and I appreciate you telling me all about it.
All right. Thanks, Shelley.
Mm-hmm. Have a good one, Charlie. Before we leave you today, a few words about a longtime friend of KTOO, Kathy Reddy, who was among one of the station's most dedicated volunteers in the 1980s and 1990s. Reddy died last September in Montana after complications from acute leukemia. She was 71. Reddy's family is holding a remembrance tomorrow, that's Thursday, at the Whale Sculpture at the Bill Overstreet Park. Her youngest daughter, Elena Merrill, says that's appropriate because her mom was one of the lead fundraisers for the sculpture.
A lot of people thought it wasn't going to work out, but mom is kind of like a dog with a bone, and she just ran with it until enough people got on board and they had enough money, and then they were able to really create Overstreet Park with the whale as the focal point. It was a pretty big accomplishment.
Reddy's daughter says her mom spent the last 10 years of her life working on the whale park, capping off a lifetime of volunteerism.
We would lovingly refer to her as the committee queen. Mom was always involved in some organization or another, the Chamber, Jazz and Classics. She helped found that with Linda Rosenthal.
Reddy was also an attorney who worked with Peter Metcalf on a book documenting the Alaska Native civil rights movement in Southeast Alaska called A Dangerous Idea. Metcalf says one of her most important legacies is not as well known, a show she produced for KTOO as a volunteer called Southeast Native Radio. Metcalf says the program started sometime in the 1980s.
Her focus on Alaska Native history, culture, language was, for the time when she moved here in the late 70s, extraordinary. At the time, there was really a general disinterest or indifference to Alaska Native topics in general by non-Natives, and not only did she have the interest, but she did the work.
As it turned out, a huge body of that work includes more than 400 recordings. Metcalf says Reddy produced the program for about 15 years. With a team of volunteer interviewers that included Alaska Natives, the project amassed a valuable collection of oral histories from Alaska Native leaders and culture bearers. The archive now lives at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, where they are being digitized. Reddy's remembrance starts tomorrow at 12:30 in front of the whale sculpture. Friends are encouraged to share music, poetry, and stories.